World Ain't Ready, a Les Mis fanfic written by Idiopathic Smile and read by Full Day's Drive. Chapter 7. "Do you think it'd be creepy to give someone a skirt?" says Eponine that night. They're sitting on the floor of Grantaire's room, a bottle between them, although neither of them are drinking much. For one thing, it's schnapps, which has not gotten less disgusting. Besides, Spanish is bad enough first thing in the morning. Showing up with a hangover would just pour on an extra zesty sauce of terrible. And, okay, also, Grantaire may have some half-formed plan of trying to get to school early tomorrow and sneaking into Angelos's first hour again, so they can get at least a few seconds to themselves to gloat about the improbable success of their plan. Angelos's plan. Whatever. Of course, God knows how, given it would be in front of an entire con econ class. Maybe Grantaire could slip him a note? Would that be awkward? But shit, what would it even say? He frowns. Eponine was definitely talking just now. What? Like, as a gift. In theory, they're watching old Mr. Show episodes on Grantaire's poor, wheezing laptop, but the video player keeps stalling, so there's no point bothering with the headphones for now. Eponine's flipping through a book. Grantaire's coloring the white part of his shoes with the permanent marker. Think it depends on who? He draws a square, shades it in. And, like, how? If it's a total stranger, and they wake up in the middle of the night and you're standing next to their bed, holding out a skirt you made from the shower curtains and staring at them, that's probably creepy. Musichetta's birthday is coming up, says Eponine, folding a corner of one page back and forth. I don't know. She said she liked mine, so... But maybe it's not something people do? Grantaire caps the marker, drags his hands down his face. Dude, I don't think you want me as the, like, arbitrator of normal. I mean, Exhibit A, my entire fucking life. You can't make a frozen pizza, Eponine agrees. Fuck you, he says, automatic. But I don't know. Maybe if you pretend hard enough like it's cool, it won't occur to her to wonder? Yeah. Eponine bites her lip. The laptop makes a noise like a tired old man, and Grantaire closes the lid to put it out of its misery. She said she liked it, he says. Yeah. He uncaps the marker again and starts in on his other shoe. How long have you been making clothes and shit anyway? She exhales, thoughtful. I don't know. Years? Why didn't I know this? Didn't think you'd care? She says. And she has a point, probably. But Grantaire blurts out, because I'm such a shitty friend? Because you've worn those same pants every day for like 5 days in a row, says Eponine. He doesn't see what that has to do with anything. They're comfortable, and cleaner than most of the other stuff on his floor. Eponine sighs. You're fine, she says. Yeah, okay. He twists the marker into the loop of his shoelace, winds it up tightly, like a noose. Eponine has stuck with him through everything without questioning it, and he doesn't even know what she does when he's not around. Hey. She bumps his shoulder. You are. Grantaire shakes his head. There are patches of time where he's not worried about anything, and patches of time where it all hits him at once. Like, suddenly the air weighs 80 pounds and he needs to lie down or he'll fall over. He's not sure how long he's supposed to keep it at bay. Tomorrow, he'll drink in the sight of Andros's victorious face, and it will get him through an hour or two. But there's still passing periods to worry about. There's still the back of the room before class starts. There's still algebra. Everyone who's saying shit about you right now is doing it because they're afraid. You know that, right? Says Eponine. She considers this. And also because they're fucking awful, but... Yeah, he says. He wishes, not for the first time, that knowing this was helpful on a moment-to-moment basis. She sets down her book and turns to face him, wincing. Grantaire, don't make this weird, but I think I need to hug you right now. What? Eponine leans forward and wraps him in her arms. There's a long second where he just sits there, his own arms flopping at his side, before he remembers how hugs work, and he reaches up to pull her closer. Her jacket is soft and smells like cigarettes. He has no idea what to say. There's no script for this. He rests his forehead against the side of her arm and swallows. Crying would count as making it weird, he's pretty sure.
"Hey, Grantaire," says Eponine, voice hushed.
"Yeah?"
"Can I keep my sewing machine at your house for a while?"
No context, no explanation. There's the Eponine he knows and loves. If his smile comes out a little wobbly, that's between him and the sleeve of her jacket. Go ahead, man. In the end, Grantaire can't summon up the nerve to go talk to Enjolras before school. But lunch is hilarious anyway, a constant struggle not to look up from his food every time Jeanne and Courfeyrac do something couply, which is most of the time. Whenever Grantaire fails, which is also most of the time, he inevitably looks up at Enjolras, and they try not to grin at each other like idiots because it's working. On the sixth or seventh occasion where Grantaire's turkey sandwich fails to keep his attention, Eponine makes a disgusted sound from around a mouthful of fries. "Okay," she says, after some chewing.
"Musiquette and Courfeyrac, swap seats. I refuse to be surrounded by gross couples on both sides."
"That's fair," says Jeanne, shrugging. Musiquette vacates her chair, looking amused, and Jeanne pulls it out for Courfeyrac with a flourish. Courfeyrac laughs. "Such a gentleman!" Eponine makes a face. "Hey, we aren't even the grossest couple at this table," Jeanne counters, although the words don't register right away, because Enjolras chooses that moment to sling his arm around Grantaire's shoulders. Grantaire could be imagining it, but he thinks they've been more handsy with each other since the weekend. On some level, once you've bruised someone's collarbone with your mouth, it's harder to freak out about holding their hand. Grantaire lets himself lean into it, get cozy. "That's fair," says Grantaire, belatedly. Enjolras laughs softly by his ear, and Grantaire's poor sandwich doesn't stand a chance. When he goes to drop off his lunch bag, someone's written "fag" on his locker in large black letters, presumably in case he forgets. He wishes he had a can of paint. He wishes he had the energy to be angry about it, that he had a goddamn teaspoon of fire in his heart. He stares at it until the warning bell rings, thinking, at least they managed to spell it right. In world myth, they're watching some terrible 80s movie so Mr. Clark can work on his online dating profile or whatever in peace. The acting is so bad, it feels like everyone's delivering their lines by accident, and Grantaire could do better special effects on MS Paint. He feels bad for everybody who spent money to see this movie when it came out, although maybe they didn't know any better. It was the 80s, after all. There aren't any relatable characters, but for some reason, there is a robot owl flying around ancient Greece. Jeanne and Grantaire spend most of the hour passing notes about the owl, detailing its increasingly elaborate backstory. That owl is at the root of everything, they decide. Gods and heroes may come and go, and say some very stilted words, but that owl's the one pulling the strings, from within its tiny mechanical talons. Grantaire draws the owl with a hat, like a 1920s mafia boss, puffing on a cigar. Jeanne captions it with a haiku. The movie never gets better, but the time goes by fast enough. If Jeanne occasionally loses focus and needs to be poked out of a dreamy-eyed reverie, well, on some level, Grantaire gets where he's coming from. Eponine is furious about the graffiti. Absolutely furious. Grantaire is trying not to enjoy it too much.
"Seriously?"
she mutters, hovering over Grantaire as he gathers up his things. "I'm so fucking done with these people." "Language, Thénardier," a teacher says mildly from somewhere behind them.
Eponine wordlessly jabs a finger at the big block letters on his locker. Grantaire's back is to the hallway, so we can't tell if the lack of response is the teacher not seeing, or choosing not to say anything. "Want to take bets on how long before the administration does something about it?" says Eponine. Grantaire closes his locker. "Are you kidding me? It'll be there when we graduate. Some poor junior next year wondering what they did to deserve it." "Those assholes," she seethes. "It's fine, man. It's not like they fucked with something that actually belongs to me. Like, the day they do something to my hat, that's the day shit goes down." She shakes her head. "They're cowards, too. That's the worst part," she says. And Eponine bypassing a prime opportunity to give Grantaire shit for his clothes is a sign of a world gone horribly askew. "We picking up your sewing machine today?" he says. The part of him that is delighted by her anger on his behalf, that wants to wrap himself up in it like a warm hoodie fresh from the dryer, is not a part of him he feels like indulging. "And Gavroche," says Eponine. "Ben, those goddamn assholes!" She slams open the double doors, and they step out into the gray, chilly afternoon. "Look on the bright side." Grantaire's not sure he's ever spoken those words together out loud before. Not in years, at any rate. At least we're not those poor bastards. He nods towards the lines of school buses milling in front of the school. He has definite bus memories. The day he got his license was a beautiful moment in his life. Eponine snorts. "When that's your silver lining," she says, and they stop for a moment to watch all those unfortunate souls lining up to get on. Grantaire catches a familiar glint of gold from his peripheral vision. Enjolras has one foot on the bus step, and a look on his face like a soldier marching off toward a battle he knows he can't win, but that he can't help fighting. Grantaire's jogging up before he's really thought it through. "Hey," he says. Enjolras turns around. "Hi?" "Don't block the fucking door, freak," says the guy standing behind Enjolras. "If you're so eager to get on a bus," says Enjolras, stepping out of line with the roll of his eyes. Seeing Enjolras be sarcastic is a pure joy. "Buses are the worst," Grantaire offers. "Like somebody heard Hell on Wheels and took it as a challenge. How literal can we get here?" "They went above and beyond," Enjolras agrees. "Courfeyrac usually gives me a ride home when there's no meeting, but..." He shrugs. "Thought he'd have other plans today." "Is that what the kids are calling it these days?" says Grantaire, waggling his eyebrows. Enjolras shakes his head. "I just didn't want to be a third wheel." "Preach," says Grantaire. "Between them and the Marius and Cosette situation, the APC is getting downright incestuous lately." "And us," he adds, a beat behind, in case anyone is listening in. "Nothing more romantic than social justice, I guess." "What's the point of fighting for a new world if you don't love the people in it?" says Enjolras. Serious, but he's looking over his shoulder. "Look, I should go before they leave without..." "I can drive you home," says Grantaire. He regrets it the second the words leave his mouth. If there are any eavesdroppers, Enjolras is trapped. What kind of person opts for public transportation over a free ride with the guy they're dating? It's a clumsy move, but Enjolras must truly hate the bus, because he looks nothing but relieved. "That'd be... thanks," he says, heartfelt, the way only Enjolras can. He's kind of dreading what Eponine will say when they rejoin her, but she just gives Enjolras a long look and says, "I call shotgun." "Can't argue with that," says Grantaire. "My hands are tied. Shotgun is a holy thing." "I'm not arguing," Enjolras says, climbing inside, and Grantaire realizes he doesn't yet know he's going to be sharing the back with the 12-year-old. Poor Enjolras. "We're detouring to the middle school first," Grantaire explains as he starts up the van. "We're picking up Eponine's little brother, and then her sewing machine, and then we'll get you home. Sorry, this won't be that much more efficient than the bus. We can try to recreate the sound of screaming children if you miss it. Blare shitty-ass country songs on the radio," Eponine suggests. Spill something unsettlingly sticky on the floor? Says Enjolras. Eponine cranes her head around. I'm liking your fake boyfriend, she says to Grantaire. How am I liking your fake boyfriend? It goes against the laws of nature. I keep forgetting you know, Enjolras tells her, with surprising grace. Unfortunately, we can't drop the act for too long, because her brother doesn't, Grantaire warns. I mean, I assumed, if he's in middle school, says Enjolras. But how hard can it be to fool a child? Eponine laughs. Oh, buddy. Who the hell is this? Are Gavroche's first words when he slides open the back passenger door. Grantaire twists around in case he needs to intervene, but Enjolras just says, I'm Enjolras. Hi. Why does a name that stupid sound familiar? Says Gavroche, scrambling inside and yanking the door shut. I'm Grantaire's, Enjolras starts. Right, right, you're the boyfriend. Gavroche is openly staring at him, in a way that makes Grantaire wince on his behalf. Not what I was expecting, but sure. How'd you guys even meet? Detention, says Enjolras. It is, of course, the exact right thing to say. Gavroche raises his eyebrows. Wow, how does a dude like you get detention? Gavroche, says Grantaire, but Enjolras doesn't seem offended. It's a long story. Give me the short version, says Gavroche, kicking the back of Eponine's seat in the most annoying possible way. Grantaire puts the car in drive and backs out of the parking lot, as Enjolras squares his shoulders and explains in a solemn undertone, I threw a shoe. What the hell? When he glances in the rearview mirror, Enjolras seems sincere. Seriously? Grantaire blurts out. Seriously, says Enjolras. Why? Of course Gavroche sounds impressed at this. Of course. You said the short version, Enjolras reminds him. Wow, says Gavroche in an appreciative tone. You're nuts! Grantaire really wishes he was in a place where he could ask for the rest of that story. Oh, good, he says wryly. He passes muster with a 12-year-old. Hold the phone. I haven't decided yet, says Gavroche. He delivers another thoughtful volley of kicks to Grantaire's seat. What's Grantaire's favorite color? Grantaire makes a face. You don't have to answer that, he says. Green, says Enjolras gravely. He's right, which is surprising until Grantaire glances down and remembers his sweatshirt is green. Lucky guess. What's his favorite food? Gavroche, says Grantaire. What the hell is this supposed to prove? He likes a lot of food, says Enjolras. Nachos, maybe? Is he a good kisser? Grantaire holds his breath and wishes for death. He's a great kisser. A sudden and embarrassing rush of gratitude floods through him. It's a stroke of genius on Enjolras' part, because it makes Gavroche halt the questions immediately. Ugh, never mind. When Grantaire checks back in the rearview mirror, Enjolras is looking right at him. Grantaire doesn't try to camouflage the grateful look on his face. Okay, dude, if we're done with interrogation hour, says Grantaire. Wait, says Gavroche. One more. Just one more, okay? And this one is the most important. What music do you like? Courfeyrac hadn't been exaggerating about this much. Enjolras' grasp of modern music is poor. Every now and then at lunch he'll reference a song, but it's always from the 70s or something. Grantaire's not sure Enjolras listens to a single band formed after Gavroche was born. The Postal Service? Enjolras volunteers, with the eagerness and precision of a man who has learned exactly one phrase of a foreign language. Ugh, says Gavroche. Emo. What else? They're coming up on the Thénardier house. Well, there's one group I'm into lately, says Enjolras slowly, but they're pretty new. Have you heard of Hamburgers? Grantaire bites his lip and makes some horrible snorting sound of repressed laughter. When he peeks at the rearview mirror, Enjolras meets his eyes immediately. Enjolras doesn't wink, but he does raise his eyebrows and deliver something like a smirk. Grantaire doesn't swoon, but he does almost hit a telephone pole. He swerves them back to safety at the last second. "Jesus, R, you could kill us with this thing," says Gavroche. And then to Enjolras, grave, "Don't think so. What's their sound like?" Enjolras hesitates. Out of sheer goodwill and kindness, Grantaire jumps in to bail him out. "Like if Rilo Kiley and Modest Mouse had a baby," he says, "and then that baby was raised by Of Montreal. Inside a Radiohead album." "Huh," says Gavroche. "OK Computer or Kid A?" "OK Computer," Enjolras parrots back. "Hamburger spelled the normal way?" "Just like the real word," says Enjolras. Grantaire very carefully keeps his eyes on the road ahead. He can't pull into the Thénardier driveway, since it's crowded front to back with its usual mystifying assortment of cars, so he parks them half in the road, half on the yard. "All right, time to help me carry, you nerd," says Eponine. Enjolras unbuckles a seatbelt. "Not you, man," she says. "My weirdo brother." She stretches back and tries to pull Gavroche's hat off, but Gavroche clutches it to his head protectively. "Well, if he's offering," says Gavroche. Eponine shakes her head. "Nope. Get your ass up, monkey." "Jerk," Gavroche mutters, rolling open the van door and hopping down. When the twin door slams have sounded, and Eponine and Gavroche are cutting across the lawn, Grantaire levers the van into park, so he can climb up onto the seat and twist around. "Do you have enough room back there?" he says. "Should I move the seat forward, or..." "It's fine," says Enjolras, forehead wrinkled in surprise or confusion. Grantaire forces himself not to apologize for what a mess the back of the van is. "So," he says instead, "all-time favorite hamburgers album?" "Doesn't cut the mustard," says Enjolras. So promptly, it's clear he'd had it ready to go in case Gavroche asked. He seems relieved to get a chance to use it. What a nerd. "You?" "Hold the pickle, probably." Enjolras rolls his eyes and makes a sound somewhere between a sigh and a snicker. "Gross." "What, do you not?" "Oh," Grantaire says, shaking his head in mock disapproval. "You and your filthy imagination, I swear." "Hey, Courfeyrac said you wanted to name his band after herpes," says Enjolras. "The worst herpes, and that was mostly Jeanne. Credit where credit's due, Hamburgers is a much better name." "I'll pass that along." A corner of Enjolras' mouth corks up in that way that makes Grantaire glad he's sitting down. Maybe it'll become a real band after all. "Cool." Grantaire laughs, rests his chin on the headrest. "Feel free to reshape reality if it means you're not on the hook for lying to a little kid." "They still need a drummer, you know," says Enjolras. He fixes Grantaire with an expectant look. Grantaire pastes a smile on. "Not ready for the rock and roll lifestyle, dude." "I'm serious." As if that's a sentence that needs to be spoken out loud, thinks Grantaire sourly. He ignores the parts of his brain that points out how Enjolras has been almost relaxed so far, how he does seem capable of making a joke when the mood strikes him. "Courfeyrac still wants to ask you." "I can save him the trouble." The confused crease is returned to Enjolras' forehead. "Did you not like playing drums?" he asks. Grantaire feels very tired all of a sudden. He rubs his eyes. "It was fine," he lies. He'd loved it. When Grantaire first got his drum, he'd played it for so long, and with such enthusiasm, that his parents threatened to ground him if he practiced more than 2 hours a day. Sometimes, he still finds himself tapping a pencil or a pen against his desk, some half-remembered routine still lingering in his muscles and bones, long after it's left his head. "Snare drum isn't the same thing," he says, lightly as he can. "Unless they're really into Sousa marches." "You already own drumsticks," says Enjolras reasonably. "If you won band trophies, you can keep a beat, and all you're up against are the demo rhythms on Marius's keyboard. Demo rhythms probably have more work ethic, says Grantaire. Less stage presence.
Dude,
says Grantaire. Why are you pushing this? Why are you so determined not to do anything? Grantaire untwists and drops back into his seat.
Okay, genius. Think about this. I assume you're going to be the embarrassing friend that shows up to every gig and every battle of the bands and memorizes all the words.
He refuses to feel fond about the mental image of Enjolras at some shitty community center, in the front of the crowd, mouthing along to Courfeyrac's dumb lyrics like their hymns.
Yeah, says Enjolras, like it's a given, because of course it is. Okay, dude. If I'm in the band too, that means we'd have to see each other all the goddamn time. Senior year would be, like, the sad ex routine, 24/7.
Why would it be an issue then, and not at meetings? Says Enjolras. Grantaire rests his forehead against the wheel and sighs.
Obviously not coming next year. We can't keep this going indefinitely, so a clean break.
It's not like Enjolras to be this shoddy with his plans.
What did you think would happen?
I figured we could do that thing where you stay friends after, says Enjolras.
Like a mutual, it just didn't work out.
Grantaire snorts.
Yeah. Nobody'd ever buy it.
Why not?
Because if we were really together, I'd only leave if you dumped me, Grantaire somehow doesn't say out loud.
Also, it doesn't actually solve the problem. Like, okay, then we're stuck pretending to be friends, he says.
Oh, says Enjolras, barely audible.
Grantaire would be embarrassed too, he thinks, to fail to put something so basic together for this long. There's a knock at the back of the van, Eponine and Gavroche with the sewing machine. He hadn't even seen them carry it across the yard.
It's not locked, he calls.
One of the back doors opens, and Eponine sticks her head in.
Grantaire, help me lift it, she says.
Fucker's heavy. Grantaire's out of his seat before the last syllable, climbing past Enjolras and hopping out the back door. Eponine's sewing machine looks like it was made in about 1910. It also weighs the same as a medium-sized boulder. He can see how she and Gavroche could drag it down the stairs and over the grass, but it's going to take their combined strength to load it in.
I can help, says Enjolras, scrambling up. You're fine, says Grantaire.
It really looks like you could use a hand.
Grantaire crouches down and gets his shoulder under one corner.
Not your problem, he grits out through his teeth.
Sit back down.
He attempts to lift it with his knees. It kind of works, although when he tries to stand, his legs buckle and he veers dangerously to the left.
Ah, Jesus! Somebody else push here, he hisses,
and Eponine essentially headbutts the sewing machine into the back of the van.
Fuck, Grantaire pants. What the hell? Why is your sewing machine made of rock? This is not the fucking Flintstones.
Cast iron, Eponine corrects.
Dude, your boyfriend offered to help, says Gavroche, who isn't breathless at all, the little shit.
That's what you get for trying to be all chivalrous, says Eponine. Let this be a lesson, young Gavroche. Chivalry's dead, and chivalry had it coming.
Grantaire walks back around to the front seat and climbs in. Behind him, he can hear a series of shrieks that says Eponine's second grab at her brother's hat was more successful. He checks the side mirror, and sure enough, Eponine is dangling the hat above Gavroche's head with one hand, and messing up his hair with the other.
Help! Child abuse! Gavroche laughs. CPS! Someone call CPS!
CPS? Asks Enjolras.
Child Protective Services, says Grantaire, in an undertone. They look into complaints about neglect and stuff.
He's not sure how he knows this, except through osmosis. It's just part of Eponine and Gavroche's vocabulary.
Enjolras leans forward, lowering his voice.
Is that really something to joke about?
Depends on how you deal with shit, I guess.
Why?
Says Enjolras.
What you guys talking about?
Gavroche's voice filters in through the back of the van.
Nothing, Enjolras calls, A beat too soon. The top of Gavroche's head pops into view.
What kind of nothing?
He asks, squeezing past the sewing machine. Grantaire forgets sometimes how much more that kid sees than what he lets on. It's way too late to pretend like they weren't whispering. If he can just shift his posture into something warmer, he thinks. He wraps a hand around Andros's arm like it was there all along, and Andros, bless him, plays along, leans in, touches the back of Grantaire's neck, and tips their foreheads together. I was just telling Andros how blue his eyes are, Grantaire says, looking up like Gavroche is interrupting something.
I can keep going if you want.
Ugh, says Gavroche. Never mind. Wait, where the hell are we going? Says Gavroche, when they turn on to Miller. Grantaire's gotta drop his man off at home, Eponine volunteers, craning her neck to look back at him through the rearview mirror. Gavroche gives the back of the seat a wistful kick.
Ugh, he says. Seriously? He's not coming back to hang out with us?
Sorry, I've got homework, says Enjolras,
and Grantaire takes a moment to appreciate the way Enjolras doesn't dismiss him, or put on some phony talking-to-kids voice, just treats Gavroche with the same level of respect he treats anyone else. Well, anyone who doesn't support the flat tax.
He has so much homework, Grantaire chimes in.
Duh, you can do it at Grantaire's house? Says Gavroche,
with the perfectly honed disdain of a middle schooler.
He's got a computer. Whatever you need, dude. Rulers? Graph paper? All the junk food you can eat? He wheedles.
We tried studying together once, Enjolras invents. It wasn't productive.
Grantaire assumes it's a dig at how irritating and distracting he'd be in any kind of one-on-one learning scenario with Enjolras. He lets it slide because, hey, fair. I'm not apologizing, he says, over Eponine's snickers.
Whatever. I'm mouthy. It's who I am. And I'm not complaining, says Enjolras,
which is about the time the pieces fit into place about what he was actually implying, and Grantaire is suddenly very glad that the only person who can see his face is Eponine.
This is terrible, says Gavroche. This sucks. Let's talk about anything else. I don't care. I would rather hear about how blue his eyes are. Jesus Christ.
As blue as Windex, Grantaire supplies.
Blue is one of those blue raspberry popsicles that dyes your tongue for fucking days.
Blue is antifreeze, says Eponine. Blue is Smurf butts. Wait, says Enjolras from the back. Specifically the butts?
Specifically the Butts is my second favorite Hamburgers album, says Grantaire.
How can they have more than one album if they're a new band?
Gavroche mutters.
They reach Enjolras' house in what feels like no time at all. There's a weird moment where Grantaire sort of wishes Gavroche would make the case again, for Enjolras staying. Really crank up the puppy eyes. Enjolras unbuckles a seatbelt.
Will you walk me to the door, Grantaire?
How is your boyfriend more ridiculous than you? Gavroche moans. How is that even a thing a person can do?
Sure thing, Cookie Feet, says Grantaire. Because it's been a while since the last horrible pet name, and because it makes Gavroche slap his forehead and emit a series of hilarious noises. When they get out of the van, Grantaire offers Enjolras his elbow. Like they're in some terrible period piece where everyone wears waistcoats and nobody talks about their feelings. It's a riff on the absurdity of escorting Enjolras to his own door. It's a commentary. It's ironic. Enjolras links his arm through, bumping their shoulders together as they head up the front walk.
Are they okay? Says Enjolras. What's their situation?
I don't really know, Grantaire admits, before he can stop to think about what a bad friend that makes him sound like. But then it's too late, so he adds, Eponine won't talk about it. Gavroche follows her lead. I don't think they're in, like, physical danger. But they stay overnight with me sometimes, on weeknights. Like, that's not normal, right? He almost can't believe he's talking about it out loud,
It's been so long since he tried to ask Eponine what was going on. He'd forgotten it was even something that could be put into words, spoken about.
I don't think it is, Angelros affirms. And I don't know. Sometimes I think, well, maybe it's just typical teenage angst, fighting with your parents, whatever. But I don't know. Sometimes Eponine has a camera. Sometimes she doesn't. Sometimes she has money for lunch. Sometimes she doesn't.
You buy her food all the time, says Angelros, like it's been weighing on him. Grantaire will admit it probably looks weird from the outside.
Yeah, and that's new, and I can't imagine it's a good sign she's letting me.
He sighs. But it's like, I can try to find out what I want to know, or I can try to be what she needs, but I can't do both?
Sounds like a lot for one person to deal with, says Angelros.
Grantaire nods. She's really tough, though.
Gavroche, too.
He clearly looks up to you, says Angelros.
He has your mannerisms. It's uncanny.
God, don't remind me. Eponine says that, too. Fucking nerve-wracking.
Why?
One Grantaire is already too many Grantaires. Angelros shrugs, and Grantaire can feel the movement all down his arm.
He could do worse.
Well, sure, says Grantaire. There are shittier men to emulate out there. He knows that. Mike, for instance. Clyde. Eddie. Gavroche's actual dad. They've reached the door. Grantaire wishes he'd thought to walk slower. He turns to leave, but he doesn't get far. Angelros hasn't actually surrendered his elbow.
Oh, God.
Angelros is frozen with one foot on the welcome mat.
What?
We need to keep him away from Barrel at all costs. Grantaire laughs.
Way ahead of you, man, he says. Have a good night.
Angelros gives his elbow one last squeeze. Verisimilitude.
You too.
Man, says Gavroche, looking up from the computer and rubbing his eyes. I can't find anything about your boyfriend's favorite band. How indie are they? His voice is an even split between frustration and awe.
Hamburgers? Says Grantaire.
Yeah, they're pretty underground. The next day, Jolie and Bossuet are waiting at his locker after second period.
Morning, says Bossuet.
Morning, says Grantaire.
What's up with this garbage?
Says Jolie, pointing to the graffiti that Grantaire has been doing his damnedest to ignore.
Someone felt like expressing themselves, he says with a shrug.
Bossuet shakes his head, sympathetic.
Sucks, man.
Yeah.
You got a marker or something? Says Bossuet.
Maybe you could scribble it out. The thoughts occurred to him, but Grantaire can't shake the feeling it would be letting them win, somehow. Blacking it out means acknowledging how much he wants it gone. Jolie tilts his head to one side.
You know, he says slowly,
you could change the F into a P, squeeze an H before the A, turn it into phagocytosis. They regard the locker door for a long moment.
Or you could make the F a B, Bossuet suggests.
Bag?
Or, like, bagel, says Bossuet.
Beagle, says Grantaire. No, wait. Bossuet looks very self-satisfied.
Eagle.
Yes! Jolie half-shouts, head bobbing with enthusiasm. Eagle! Make it say eagle! Grantaire can't keep the smile off his face, watching the two of them. He digs into his pocket.
Hang on.
There's no telling the random shit Grantaire could be carrying right now. At first pass, he comes up with three crumpled pieces of paper, a mangled stick of gum, a finger puppet, and half a pack of cigarettes.
Shit, can you hold this?
He says, depositing the whole fistful into Bossuet's outstretched hand. At the second try, he grabs up his permanent marker and uncaps it with a flourish.
Let's make this happen, Grantaire says.
He reaches up and adds the single line that converts the F to an E. He scrawls the L and D at the end, trying to match the original handwriting as much as he can.
"Love it," says Bossuet.
"Yes," says Jolie. "Eagles are rad." Grantaire tacks on an S, and dutifully adds,
"are rad."
"The people need to know," he says solemnly. Jolie cackles and punches the air.
"Nice," says Bossuet, leaning against Eddie's locker.
"Not sure it's complete without a visual aid, though."
"Ooh, draw an eagle!" yells Jolie.
He points a finger at Grantaire.
"R, I challenge you right now to draw the raddest eagle you can."
"Rad as science will allow," Bossuet agrees.
Grantaire sketches a stern bird face with a stern bird beak. He draws on a pair of sunglasses.
"I think he needs a leather jacket," says Bossuet.
And Grantaire fills in the body, the feathers in the front mostly covered by a pair of dark lapels.
"So rad! So rad!"
Jolie is hopping from one foot to the other.
"Draw a speech bubble! Make him say something! Make him say something almost too rad to handle!"
Grantaire taps the end of the marker against his lips, thinking. Finally, it comes to him. He outlines the bubble and writes,
"Broccoli?
No way!"
"I'm glad we were here to witness this moment," Bossuet says.
"But, and I don't think this can be overlooked, maybe he needs a skateboard?"
"You may be correct," says Grantaire.
"Raddest eagle in history," says Jolie.
"Ahem," says Vice Principal Javert. "Well, shit." Grantaire spins around. The marker is uncapped in his hand. It doesn't look good.
"Do I need to remind you about the rules against vandalizing school property?" says Vice Principal Javert. Grantaire shakes his head.
"Sir?" says Bossuet.
His property had already been vandalized. He was just... Javert's laser focus tracks to Bossuet's hand, and the crumpled cigarette pack inside. He raises his eyebrows.
"I suppose you'll say you're holding that for a friend," says Javert acidly.
"I don't understand," Enjolras says later that day, at the lunch table, as they wait for the others to join them. "How did you and Bossuet get detention during passing period?" Grantaire shakes his head. "Artistic differences." Enjolras opens his mouth like he's going to protest, or at least ask a follow-up question. But that's about the time that Jeanne, Courfeyrac, and Marius walk in, and everything takes a turn for the worse. Grantaire can tell something is wrong from 10 yards away. They're walking with their heads bent together, and Jeanne is saying something very quickly, the motions of his hands jerky and insistent. They look furious. Not like they're fighting with each other, but like something has... "Hey," says Grantaire.
"Jeanne? What happened to your shoes?"
Because for once, Jeanne's pinkish-orange glittery loafers are nowhere to be seen. He's wearing what are probably his gym shoes, plain white Keds. It's disconcerting. "There was an incident," says Jeanne, dropping onto a chair, his posture tight.
Those fuckers,"
says Marius, who has never said anything harsher than "oh my gosh" in Grantaire's hearing. Courfeyrac is silent, but the way he and Jeanne lean into each other is half comfort, half defiance. The fingers of his free hand twitch on the table. The three of them are so angry, it takes a while for Grantaire to piece together what happened. Apparently, while Jeanne was changing in gym, a pack of upperclassmen grabbed his shoes, said the kind of bullshit he'd expect, as Jeanne puts it, in a voice crackling with disdain. Threw the shoes into a urinal, and peed on them. Someday, Grantaire's going to lose his capacity for surprise at how shitty people are. It has to be coming. He's sure of it.
"What is our game plan?" says Courfeyrac.
"Tell me, what do we need to do here? Because we can't do nothing, this is so fucked up."
"It's destruction of property. That's pretty serious," says Combeferre. "It's literally a hate crime," says Enjolras.
"Is it your word against theirs, Jeanne?" says Musichetta. Jeanne shakes his head and starts digging in his backpack. People saw, he says. I'm making a list of everyone who is in the room. Most of them wouldn't take my side, but there are a few we might be able to talk to, and a few more that weren't there but will probably at least back me up that these guys have been bothering me. A list. That's a good idea. Combeferre retrieves his own notebook and pen. I'll take notes. Make sure we don't forget anything. Maybe you don't need witnesses, says Eponine. Is there a security camera? Marius looks dubious. In the locker room? Is there? Grantaire doesn't remember there being one, but what does that prove? I don't think there would be, Enjolras says. With privacy acts, the Fourth Amendment. It might even be illegal. Doesn't mean it isn't there, says Eponine, and Enjolras flashes her an impressed look. In a very different world, they could be friends, he thinks. Worth noting, says Enjolras, gesturing with the hand that isn't wrapped around Grantaire's arm, where it has been since... Grantaire doesn't even know when. Things are happening very quickly. Grantaire tries to listen, but his attention keeps slipping. There's a queasy feeling in his stomach. His first freshman year, when he'd started to fall apart in noticeable, ugly ways, there were guys who said things to him, who pushed him around. Sometimes, it was bad enough to merit a trip to the nurse's office, a scrape, a bloody nose, something that might have been sprained, but that was personal. Grantaire had been an annoying little shit and an easy target, that was all. The problem hadn't been anything bigger than him. There is something undeniably creepy about the whole episode. We can't let them win, Musichetta is saying. Privately, Grantaire thinks that if the guys in question happen to be on the football team, hell, if they're on the baseball team, the administration is going to do everything possible to cover their asses. It's David versus Goliath, if Goliath had nukes. He can't keep his eyes off the ground. He's so used to those ridiculous loafers that it feels like someone just reached down and erased where Jeanne's shoes would be. Marius follows his gaze, confused. Grantaire, are you okay? Fine, he says. Enjolras is turned away, focused on whatever Musichetta and Jeanne are talking about, but his thumb rubs back and forth on Grantaire's arm, almost absently. Grantaire thinks that if he was in the habit of congratulating Enjolras for a job well done on all this fake boyfriend stuff, there would be some gold stars being handed out right now. He's aware he should be paying attention, but it's not like he has anything to contribute. He knows the school's anti-bullying policy back to front, but expecting that to have any bearing on what will happen feels almost like superstition. Part of him wants to bolt. He's not sure what's keeping him there. Well, on some level, Enjolras' hand on his arm. That's not the whole story, though. There's an electricity at the table. It feels like they should be poring over maps or something. It feels like they're planning a war. Grantaire has every expectation they're doomed, but there's a certain charge in being on a sinking ship together. He looks down again at those stupid blank keds. It's like blotting out the word on his locker. On some level, the bastards are still getting what they want. 100 accumulated memories, parents and teachers and coaches. Ignore them, Grantaire. They're only after a reaction. Well, hell, he thinks. I'll give them a reaction. The Sharpie pen that got him that detention is still in his pocket. He pulls it out with his free hand. Hey, Jeanne, he says. Your shoes are looking a little white flag of defeat. Want me to fix them? He gestures with the marker, fumbling for something that will ease some of the tension, make Jeanne smile. Walt Whitman and Edgar Allan Poe mud wrestling? Emily Dickinson flipping Hemingway the bird? Jeanne grins, eyes flashing. Fuck it, he says. Fuck it. Grantaire, draw me flowers. And then it's easier. Jeanne sets his gym shoes on the table, and Grantaire at least has something to do. A chrysanthemum blooms across one toe, petal by petal. He draws violets and roses and daisies, a butterfly flapping on the arch support, because why not? An iris, a lily, a tulip? There had been a while where he'd been interested in botany, and he doodled flowers all the time. Had gotten pretty good at it. Why'd he ever stopped?
Right.
Because people gave him shit. He draws a pansy coming up from the sole, curling out in front of a sprig of lilacs. Daffodils, orchids, poppies. When the first shoe is done, it's covered heel to toe in the curliest, most graceful lines he can manage. He grabs its twin, and he knows already they won't be symmetrical, but maybe that's better. This should really be in color, says Eponine into his ear. Grantaire shakes his head without looking up. The bell will have to ring at some point, and he needs to have this done.
I only have black.
He starts in on a sunflower, working as fast as he can without getting sloppy. She brings her hand in front of his face, a fistful of markers and pens of every stripe. Took up a collection, she says quickly. Combeferre is every highlighter color ever invented. He nudges the finished shoe in her direction, then uncap something and start coloring. It's like all of their stoned, drunk craft hours were practice for this moment. Grantaire is absorbed in his work, but he can catch Eponine's hands out of the corner of his eye, and she's a whirlwind. He's vaguely aware the conversation is still happening, but he doesn't have the brain power to spare. In a weird way, he feels a kind of peace. He's exactly where he should be. Guys, says Musichetta, the bell's gonna ring in like 5 minutes. Get in here and help me with all these goddamn petals, Eponine tells her. The discussion shifts then. It's still going, but everyone seems to grab a color and find a spot to fill in. There's a jumble of hands around each shoe, a flurry of traded gel pens and markers. Grantaire draws the last vein of the last leaf, gives himself a second to stretch out his fingers. It's more drawing in one day than he's done since he quit sketching at meetings. Snatches up a teal highlighter, and dives back in. The last flower is finished about 30 seconds before the bell. The shoes are a riot of color. Half Monet, half acid trip. So, we'll talk about the rest of the meeting then? Says Jeon. Everyone who had been paying attention, nods. Good, he says. Then he beams. Holy hell, he says in a hushed voice. These are such cool shoes. Jeon undoes the laces like he's unwrapping a Christmas present. It's the second time today Grantaire has made someone happier just by drawing something. His hands are starting to cramp, but he can't bring himself to complain about it, even in his own head. He flexes his sore fingers and smiles. When he looks over, Enjolras is watching him intently, with some hard-to-define expression. What? Says Grantaire. Enjolras coughs. You've got marker on your face.
Well, yeah, Grantaire says. There's basically no way I don't.
Right here. Enjolras' thumb traces over one cheekbone, almost too light to feel. Grantaire swallows. If you do the old mom trick where you lick your finger and try to rub it off, I'm breaking up with you, he manages. The bell rings, and Enjolras steps back. It's not until Baharel is slipping into class and miming a confused finger at his own face that Grantaire remembers. Right, he never actually did anything about the marker. The teacher grants him a bathroom pass with no resistance or suspicion. Really, except for Mr. Clark, most teachers have been more chill with him in the past couple of weeks. He can't tell if it's a sympathy thing, or just that his decreased interest in fucking with him lately has created some kind of accidental truce. It makes life easier, even if it does add to the feeling that every feature of his reality is tilting off course. In bad ways, in good ways, Grantaire doesn't even have the energy to ride out each wave of feeling anymore. Is he friends with Jolie and Bossuet now? Did it really take nothing more than a manufactured interest in Jolie's show, and some dumb jokes about birds? Is Jeon going to be safe walking around with shoes that are basically a multicolored kick-me sign? What was up with that look Enjolras gave him just before the bell? Because he doesn't think it was intentional. It wasn't cozy or settled enough to be a fake boyfriend look. It was more like surprise. Grantaire shakes his head. What he wouldn't give, to have the capacity to genuinely surprise Enjolras, He's the least objective witness of all time. It's got to all be in his mind. At any rate, Anjaros wasn't lying. When he looks in the mirror, he's got an impressive case of marker face going on. There's a blue fingerprint at the hinge of his jaw, and some mottled green on his forehead. But most noticeable is the streak of ink across his left cheekbone, bright red. It looks almost like it's there on purpose. For a moment, he's not sure if he wants to wash it off, or find another red marker for the other side. Just own it. Like makeup. Like war paint.
"Yo," says Barrel, when Grantaire returns, freshly scrubbed. The red is still there, but you have to be looking for it. "Yo, did you make your boyfriend listen to his mixtape yet?" When Grantaire shakes his head, Barrel claps both hands to his forehead and groans. "It's been weeks, dude." It has. Grantaire doesn't know how to explain that it's out of his hands, that the opening track is his now. Playing it for anyone else would be like reading his diary out loud in public, or peeling off his skin and letting passers-by gawk at his circulatory system. What would he even do if he exposed that song to Anjaros, and Anjaros didn't like it? What would he do if Anjaros said, "Turn that off," or, "Don't you think the lyrics are a bit much?" Or, "I don't like the singer's voice?" How could he cope if Anjaros just shook his golden head and shrugged, unaffected? "By the end of the week, come on," Barrel urges. He, like, inspired that whole mix. He needs to hear it. "I'll try," says Grantaire, wincing. "You are killing me," says Barrel solemnly. "Absolutely killing me. Also, I'll tell you the answer to number 4 if you can help me define capitalism in a way that doesn't sound sarcastic." Grantaire had honestly thought he couldn't screw up his algebra grade any worse. It was a failure of imagination. His headphones and music for every second of class system is shaping up to be his downfall. When they get their quizzes back, it's a second F in a row. The one good thing about algebra is there are no assigned seats, so every day is a different chance to find a spot where nobody will try to bug him. It hasn't happened yet, but it could. Maybe. You'd think the front row would be safe, but today, the girl next to him keeps trying to catch his eye. The main thing he knows about her is she's a freshman, which implies she's got to be good at math. They've never spoken, for obvious reasons. Not a lot of common ground. Today, she's wearing a cross necklace and the expression of someone steeling themselves for a confrontation. He's not sure if she's trying to save his soul or just make him turn his MP3 player down. The teacher is writing something on the board. It's hard to concentrate with all these guitars in his ears. What is Grantaire going to do if he winds up having to retake a math class again? How can he even pretend like he's a soldier in Anjaros's war when he can't deal with the prospect of a 90-pound girl saying something mean? The freshman reaches out and sets a folded piece of paper on his desk. He flicks it to the ground and turns up the volume. Jeanne and Grantaire are supposed to be doing a worksheet, but it's a matching exercise. And for some reason, Mr. Clark made the numbers align with letters in an entirely predictable pattern that Jeanne cracks about 3 minutes in. "Is it kind of fucked up," says Grantaire, "that this class bills itself as world mythology when all we've done the whole semester is talk about the Norse, the Greeks, and the Romans?" Jeanne starts to open his mouth, and Grantaire thinks to add, "I mean, okay. We had that day trip into ancient Egypt, but I don't know if that even counts. We get one picture of the Egyptians, and they're just drawn like a bunch of white people with tans and eyeliner. Seriously, have we talked about Asia even once? Weren't there people in Australia at some point? Isn't the rest of Africa also technically part of the world?" "Be glad Marius isn't here, because he'd totally be cooing right now," says Jeanne. "What?" Jeanne taps a toe against the chair leg, arrhythmic. He keeps looking down at his shoes. It seems to relax him. "You're starting to sound like him," he says. "It's cute, that's all." "Like Marius?" Grantaire has never heard Palmercy sound off on the importance of Australian mythology.
Okay, come on, says Jaehyun.
Grantaire replays what he said back in his head. He used to try to match Andros's cadences, that style of ranting, back a million years ago, when he lived to earn an eye roll or an exasperated snort at meetings. It was hard to get right. He couldn't, generally. He wasn't aiming for an Andros impression today. It wasn't even on his mind. He just can't stop thinking about how screwed up it is that someone could act like world means three countries, and nobody would call them on it. Where is the outrage? Something panicky flutters in his chest. I'm not saying we should go pick at the Bullfinch Estate or something, he mumbles. I'm not saying let's go sue Thor. Just, it's fucked up, right?
The tapping pauses.
Grantaire.
Jaehyun sighs and rubs his forehead.
Yeah, he says. You're right. It's fucked up.
Somehow, it's still only Wednesday. In the time between lunch and the last bell, his locker has been painted over, all traces of the world's raddest eagle lost to history. He presses his fingertips to the door, and they come away dry. It must have been a rush job. Not so surprising. He wishes he'd thought to take a picture. When he does the combination and swings it open, a piece of folded glossy paper tumbles out and onto the floor. Someone must have slipped it through the door. He stoops to pick it up, and for some reason, his mind goes back to Jolene's birthday invitation from a million years ago. Maybe Musichetta is having a party, he thinks. The paper is the wrong size for a card, and there's a Jesus fish on the front. Grantaire revises his guess. He doesn't want to read it, so of course he does, eyes racing over the text before he can make himself stop. It's a pamphlet for one of those youth brainwashing camps, some kind of pray the gay away bullshit, and Grantaire's mouth is dry. He can't breathe. Somehow, this is so much worse than everything else that's happened to him. When he darts a glance over his shoulder, there is a small knot of conservatively dressed kids at the other end of the hallway, trying very hard to act like they're not watching him. He looks down at the pamphlet, and back at them. Distantly, he notes that their poker faces are terrible. Distantly, he thinks that's probably what happens when you decide all the performing arts are the work of Satan. Distantly, his hands are shaking. Freedom, says the pamphlet, from the pain and shame of... The kids are still watching him, and he thinks, wildly, don't let them see you reading it. He picks up his backpack. He closes his locker. He lets the pamphlet drop to the ground. He thinks, step on it as you walk by. He puts one foot on the paper, but it's much more slippery than he anticipated. His balance lurches away, his feet slide out from under him, and he's bracing himself for impact when a hand catches at his elbow, another at the small of his back. Are you all right? Says Enjolras. The soles of his shoes make contact with the tile again. Enjolras's hands are light but solid, steadying. They don't rush to move away, even when it's clear his feet are safely back on the ground. Grantaire exhales through his nose, trying to let the panic out. Fine, he says. Oh, hey, says Enjolras, noticing the pamphlet. You're getting those too? He says it like they're talking about the weather. This is my first, Grantaire manages. You've gotten... plural? Enjolras shrugs. For a while. It's dropped off, though. I think, after last history debate, they realized I'm beyond redemption. His voice may have a certain element of pride to it. Whoever they are. Grantaire flicks his eyes towards the four kids at the opposite end of the hallway. At least one of them is wearing a Bible camp t-shirt. All of them look horrified. No wonder. Enjolras has stepped around to face him more squarely, but his hand is still low on Grantaire's back. Grantaire wonders if it makes him a bad person how much he hopes Enjolras kind of forgets to stop doing that. Just a guess, he says. Enjolras glances back at the likely culprits and snorts. Turn your head more to the side, he commands. No, the other way. Grantaire dutifully rotates his head a few inches, and Enjolras leans in, breath warm on the side of his face. "Remember that night you dropped me off?" Grantaire nods very slightly.
"From their angle, does this look like a kiss?"
Enjolras half whispers.
Grantaire's knees don't go weak, exactly, but that hand at his back is a big help in keeping him upright.
He shakes his head.
It's hard to tell from this close, but Enjolras seems to deflate. They pull apart a little.
"No worries," says Grantaire.
He toes the scuffed linoleum and tries to school his features into something sweet, uncomplicated.
"I'll just pretend you said something super romantic." "And a little dirty," Enjolras suggests, making Grantaire give a bark of surprised laughter.
"Seriously, dude?"
Enjolras traces his hand up between Grantaire's shoulder blades and back down, a move designed to look flirtatious from far away. In a low voice, he says, "For someone who gives me a hard time about how innocent I supposedly am, you are very easy to shock." The thought of Enjolras trying to shock him on purpose does things to his bloodstream. Giddy, dangerous things. Grantaire leans a few inches forward.
"When you do it, yeah. It's like hearing profanity from a Care Bear."
"A Care Bear? Really?"
says Enjolras,
and hopefully his head is angled downwards enough that the Christian Coalition can't see the face he's making.
"It's a metaphor," Grantaire informs him. "Poetic license, dude."
Enjolras raises his eyebrows, good-humored.
"I'm almost a head taller than you. If one of us is a Care Bear, it's not me."
"Or Superman," Grantaire volunteers.
"So, either I'm a flying superhero or a cartoon bear?" says Enjolras. "Do I get to pick?"
"Or, like, Jesus," says Grantaire,
just to add some spice to the mental picture.
"Picture Jesus waggling his eyebrows and making filthy jokes, okay?
It's hard to process."
"Purity is a social construct," Enjolras informs him,
and Grantaire leans forward to rest his head against Enjolras' shoulder and hide whatever naked affection has got to be all over his features.
"A person can be a virgin and still have all kinds of thoughts," says Enjolras, almost defensive.
Grantaire should really take a step back. That is the thing he should be doing. Enjolras traces his hands up past Grantaire's shoulder blades, fingertips just stopping at the nape of his neck. Grantaire does not make any kind of embarrassing sound, because he is a goddamn professional.
"Thoughts?" he says instead.
The hand sweeps back down his back, and Enjolras huffs.
"You know what I mean," he says. "Also, who's to say Jesus didn't make dirty jokes? He and the apostles were pretty young, and they probably had a lot of downtime, wandering around the desert."
"Turning water into wine," Grantaire agrees.
He hasn't seen the inside of a church since his uncle's second wedding.
"Chilling with, like, lepers and prostitutes."
"Exactly," says Enjolras, as if he's been waiting the whole day for someone to say it. Grantaire pulls back far enough to get a look at him, and Enjolras smiles at him, warm, and reaches up to carefully tilt Grantaire's head to the side again.
"Are they buying it, do you think?"
he whispers. For an instant, he's confused, and then he remembers.
"Right, the lying."
Grantaire cranes his neck so he can whisper back.
"I don't know. Do they look mad?"
"Furious," says Enjolras happily.
"Here, you can see."
He pivots them both a quarter turn, until Grantaire's back is to the lockers. It's a surprisingly fluid move, like something from a waltz. To anyone watching, it would look like Enjolras pushed him against the wall to kiss him. Grantaire checks from the corner of his eye. The four kids are talking emphatically with each other. It's a small enough school that he can recognize one of them. The girl from algebra isn't there, but the tallest one is in his English class. She's quiet, well-behaved, a good student.
Well, of course.
It's not just the bullies that hate him now.
"It's more convincing if you don't keep looking at them," Enjolras observes.
"Sorry," says Grantaire. He shuts his eyes.
Says Enjolras. "Are you okay? Should we stop?"
"No, I'm cool," Grantaire tells him, willing it to be true. He can do this.
He can. He should probably open his eyes again.
Enjolras is giving him a worried look.
I'm fine, says Grantaire.
He tries to smile like he's said something sweet.
Okay, says Enjolras slowly.
Then, have you ever heard Fouilly talk about Jesus?
Grantaire shakes his head.
He makes a pretty good case for how, if Jesus were alive today, he'd be a fundamentalist's worst nightmare.
The hand on his upper back has migrated to the side of his neck. It feels nice.
Spending all his time with the people everyone else judges. Outraged about poverty? Outraged about prejudice?
Enjolras doesn't have to fake anything, talking like this. His eyes are bright. He's brimming with joy. He really does look like he's in love.
If Grantaire meets that gaze from this close, he's going to go crazy. If he looks away, he can't escape the horrified glares from the other side of the hallway, which is getting less funny by the second.
The girl in English with him? He thinks her name is Stacy. She's a good artist. When they do presentations, her posters always look nice. He lent her a pen once. She's peer-edited his essays before, and she drew a smiley face on the paper even when he did a shitty job. She thinks he's going to hell, that he deserves to be there. Are there more Fouillys in the world, or more Stacys? It's not a hard question. He blinks.
It bothers you, says Enjolras suddenly.
What?
It bothers you,
he says again. And damn, Grantaire wishes he had the internal energy reserves to lie right now. He shakes his head, eyes hot. What does Enjolras know about it, striding tirelessly forward like an advancing army, miles above all the muck and the stupid teen bullshit? Enjolras, who can say, most people didn't like me to begin with, the way you'd say, I'm allergic to peas.
Sorry, we can't all be fucking men of steel, Grantaire bites out.
I think it bothers Jeanne sometimes, says Enjolras simply. And I know for a fact it bothers Courfeyrac. He frowns.
He said you talked to him, when you dropped him off from Jolie's. That you told him the group had his back and...
Grantaire doesn't particularly want to get into the things he told Courfeyrac.
Most of that was just straight up borrowed from stuff he told me, he says.
He and Jeanne kind of gave me this talk. A muscle in Enjolras' jaw twitches. It is definitely not the trying not to laugh muscle.
I know, he says. They told me.
He sighs.
You know, when I asked you in the first place, I figured people would go at least somewhat easy on you.
You know, since you're popular. I'm not, Grantaire gets out. And Enjolras says,
I know. I'm sorry.
So sincerely that Grantaire has to look away again. The truth is way more complicated, but even if he felt like getting into it, he wouldn't know where to start. What he wants to do is cover his face with his hands, but that would absolutely break up the scene they're staging. The show must go on, he thinks.
My point is, Enjolras continues, I was under the impression that you knew you could say something, if problems came up. But I'm getting the sense that people have been treating you pretty badly.
Grantaire frowns.
How did...
Bossuet told me about your locker, says Enjolras.
I have 6th hour with him in Corf. That's what I came here to talk to you about, but...
He glances behind Grantaire and makes a face. Apparently covering up a bird in a jacket is more important than undoing a hate crime.
Okay, it wasn't a hate crime,
says Grantaire, swallowing.
It's nothing like what happened to Jeanne, it was just... some asshole with a marker.
But his voice is all fucked up, and he can't meet Enjolras' eyes. He can't sell it. He sucks in a breath.
It bothers me, he says softly.
Hey. Enjolras tips his chin back up because, improbably, they're still keeping the act going. The pads of his fingers are careful on Grantaire's jaw, and he still smells like oranges. Grantaire is going to have the weirdest associations with citrus fruits for the rest of his life.
Want to get out of here?
He whispers, like it's a wonderful secret.
Fuck yeah,
Grantaire whispers back, and Angelros wraps an arm around his shoulders.
Want to, drive me home since there's no way I didn't just miss the bus?
When he looks up, the cluster of teen evangelists has dispersed. He doesn't know when that happened. How long they've been play-acting for an audience of zero. He makes an executive decision not to point this out. The hallway's still not empty, so it's justifiable that Grantaire lets his arm settle around Enjolras' waist.
Was this all a long con to get a ride home? He says instead.
You caught me, says Enjolras dryly. Those were paid actors. They don't even go here. They head down towards the south exit. The wrestling coach glares at them as he walks by. Enjolras squeezes Grantaire's shoulder. Please tell me there is somewhere in this horrible town that sells ice cream.
Nope, sorry. We're an ice cream-free county, says Grantaire. There's an ordinance and everything. Sherbet Mafia, what can you do?
The problem is, I almost believe you, Enjolras says, shaking his head. God, I hate the suburbs. College towns have their problems, but at least you could walk places. At least there are places to walk to. It occurs to him that he doesn't actually know where Enjolras used to live.
We can stop by a store or something, he offers.
Not totally sure how I'll drive you home became I'll pick up your groceries, but whatever, I'm flexible. He tries to make this sound chill and not pathetic. It's a fine balance. Grantaire is kind of sucking at chill lately. He can feel it.
No, says Enjolras. I meant, is there a drive-thru or an ice cream shop or something?
When he sighs, they're pressed close enough that Grantaire can track the rise and fall of breath. Just, I've had a really unpleasant day,
and I'm guessing you have too, he says.
It's almost an even split between a question and a statement. But Enjolras is back on solid ground and exhale later. After all of that, I think the world owes us ice cream. No matter how Grantaire takes that statement apart, it sounds like Enjolras is suggesting they get this ice cream together. Half-formed images of 1950s-style malt shop dates dance in his head. Will they split a milkshake? Serenade each other with songs in the jukebox? Will he wear Enjolras' letter jacket? Only if fighting the man becomes a varsity sport. More importantly, Enjolras continues, it'll give us a chance to talk about what we're doing on Friday.
What? Says Grantaire. What's on Friday?
Enjolras' forehead takes on a familiar wrinkle.
Our date? Remember, since I can't do Saturday this week?
Come to think of it, Grantaire does remember this coming up at the lunch table. And it makes practical sense for them to plan this before Friday actually happens. They've managed to trade phone numbers since that first disaster at Grantaire's house, but he can't begrudge Enjolras for wanting to get everything settled face to face. It's all very reasonable. Much more reasonable than a sudden craving for quality time alone with Grantaire. He takes a moment to remind himself that he isn't disappointed.
Anyway, says Enjolras, you've given me multiple rides home every week, and I have the sense you're not going to let me give you gas money, so if I get you a cone...
Oh no, you're not covering this. I still owe you for the pizza, remember? They reach the security camera by the door, and Grantaire gives it a salute. It's not so bad. It's miles better than anything else he had going this afternoon. And even if I buy yours today, I'll still owe you money. Unless you're planning on ordering yourself, like, a literal fish tank full of ice cream. They push through the double doors. You're only young once, Enjolras tells him.
Carpe diem. That's the spirit.
Wait. Grantaire stops in the middle of the sidewalk, sunlight streaming down on them.
Improbably, it is beautiful out.
Motherfucker, was that a pun? 10 minutes ago, he was being damned to hell. Now he's heading off to eat Sundays with Enjolras.
Shit, he thinks.
What a weird day.